It looks like they switched out the adapter, so I think we are ready to kick off.
Awesome. All right. What we're going to do is we're going to spend time.
Introduce ourselves.
That's right. We did not introduce ourselves.
So I'm Nathan Miller. I'm a solution specialist with Microsoft. I work in our consulting services group.
And I'm Israel Vega. I'm a SharePoint architect with Inkblot Consulting, an independent consultant. And we're here to talk to you today about authentication patterns. And what we did was we took a different spin on this. What we wanted to do was talk to you about the different ways that your solutions are going to come together. And what we're trying to do here is really help you understand what is identity and what does it mean to the solutions that you're going to create, both for on-premise, for hybrid, and specifically in the cloud. What do those identity solutions look like, and what are the things that you have to really think about? Before we jump into it, though, we wanted to give you a level set and a catch-up. We realize that some people are new to SharePoint, or new to the identity space, so we'll give you a quick catch-up. We want to introduce you to some of the identity basics. These are just things that, as we've been doing identity for a while, we understand and we kind of know, and these are things we want to pass on to you. We'll also talk about SharePoint apps and how SharePoint apps fit into the picture, how authentication works, how authorization works for some of these SharePoint apps, and then we'll get into these advanced patterns being extranets, cloud configurations with Office 365, and we got some pretty cool demos that we can show you as well. So previously on the SharePoint, to catch you up, you know how most shows, they give you a previously on. So we're going to give you a previously on the SharePoint in about 2 minutes, actually about 2 seconds. So first there was this version called SharePoint Team Services. Then it became this version that no one really wants to talk about. Then we had SharePoint Portal Server because everybody was doing portals. So portals were cool, and we had a pie, but it wasn't a pie that you can eat. It wasn't a pumpkin pie. It was just a regular pie. Then we actually dropped the portal and became just Office SharePoint 2007. Then we dropped the Office and became SharePoint 2010. After that, we still had a pie, but that looked more like a squid. Or a
jellyfish.
SharePoint 2010, used it on-premise. Everything was great, but a lot of people were going to the cloud, so we wanted to go to the cloud. We're not in the cloud, it's online, so we called it SharePoint Online, but it was more than SharePoint. It was also Office, so we called it Office 365, 366 on a leap year. And you can use that in the cloud or on-premise. But we started seeing these patterns where people wanted to do both, or people didn't want to make a choice, so we had to go claims. We had to do something that would allow us to bridge the gap between these two environments. So we had to go claims. We went claims in SharePoint 2010, then we dropped the numbers altogether, became SharePoint, in the cloud it became Office 365, 366 on a leap year. And here, if you're doing both of them, it's called a hybrid. So that is, you're caught up. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, moment of silence, please.
We didn't have time to put InfoPath in there. It came in late. All right.
Good. Good. That was 13 years of SharePoint. In 2 seconds.
So if you look left, you look right, you are on the same page now.
You all know as much SharePoint as the next person. You're welcome.
All right, you know what? He switched me off on the dongle, but I'm going to guess it's I don't know which one it would be. Maybe 7? Yes, 7. All right. So what we thought we'd do is let's talk about kind of what the environment would look like if we had kind of all of these things, right? So we've got an environment where we have Office 365. We have an environment where we have on-premise SharePoint. We also have an environment where we have line of business applications, line of business apps that live in the cloud, and maybe line of business apps that obviously live on-premise, because that's where your line of business apps live today, most likely. So anyway, so what I thought I'd do is let's start walking through kind of a user experience of what that looks like, and then through some of the other demos, we'll actually show you how we wired it up and published and actually did the protocol transitions and all that funky stuff. So I'll go ahead and start out and go to my tenant. That's not my tenant. All right, so I went out to my Contoso tenant, and I'll go ahead and, so I've set this tenant up so I can actually do cloud IDs and also IDs managed by my directory synchronization. So it does basically a home realm discovery if I actually type in an ID that actually does the synchronization. So if I do corp.contoso.com, as soon as I hit that, it actually does a home realm discovery. It goes to my ADFS. So if you ever done anything with ADFS, we've got home realm discovery in ADFS. We also have it in Azure. And 365 uses that kind of same concept. So what you're going to see here is we're going to redirect to my ADFS that's hosted. But if you're a corporate machine, so I'm kind of worst case scenario that I've got a machine that I'm not a corporate user. I didn't do the remember me. And the reason why is because I wanted to show you kind of every prompt where we're actually doing kind of re-authentication during a given session. So in this case, I'll go ahead and log in. And so this is going to log me into my Office 365 environment. So what's actually happening is when I log into the ADFS, it's actually passing a few claims over to Office 365. And Office 365, because we're doing that directory sync of that ID, it basically creates a shadow account for us. So that UPN that matches that gets passed to Office 365 maps to a user, and it actually hydrates that user in the Office 365 context. So that's why I'm able to do, you know, gal looks up. That's why I'm able to do security by name and things like that. So in this case, what I wanted to show you was there were a lot of conversations this week or sessions this week that kind of talked about hybrid configurations and kind of setting it up end-to-end and whatnot. I'm not really going to show you kind of the setup end-to-end. There's a couple of things I will show you that I don't think were covered. But as far as kind of the PowerShell script and whatnot, it's out there on the web. There were good sessions about it this week. So definitely go back and kind of look at that. But some of the things that I do want to show you is when we talk about hybrid configurations, we talk about basically PowerShell scripts and doing S-test trust between Office 365 and on-premise. But in this case, we can also do just context type of integration. So if you see up here, I've got Teams, I've got projects. And if you look down at my URLs, it basically what ends up happening is I've got some things on-premise, I've got some things in the cloud. So for example, if I click on projects, it's basically using, I'm not a domain machine, so it's actually using that same authentication token that I had and going to my on-premise farm as my current user. So I'm still Karen, but I'm actually going to an on-premise farm now that's published through 2012 R2 to kind of have that seamless experience. So for our users, you know, a lot of customers I talk to kind of get hung up on, we've got a 2010 farm on-prem, or we've got a 2013 farm on-prem, but we're not sure about what we're going to do about the cloud. We've got a good deal on the cloud, and maybe we want to put some of the stuff out there. But really, the concept is just think about workloads and how, you know, we can combine those. But from an identity standpoint, you know, if you're using ADFS and you're using a publishing mechanism or you have Windows integrated, it's going to work for you whether you're on corporate net or whether you've published that like I have through a reverse proxy. And I can have that kind of seamless experience. So let me go ahead and show you a couple other things. So if I go over to my search environment, I can go ahead and type, let's search for SharePoint. So I'll do a SharePoint search and it searches Office 365. And I could also click on and search intranet. The one thing to note, if you attended Neil's session on kind of doing hybrid search, this is not really hybrid search. This is basically just doing URL redirection to different search engines. So you can, again, because I've got the identity of that user, I can basically pass between web applications. So that's kind of how we're doing that without having to do an additional kind of hybrid configuration for the search environment. But one of the things that we a lot of times get questions about is, well, we can't move to the cloud or we can't move because we've got applications that that we've built. So in that case, I have a couple of applications here, and we're going to talk about some of the security patterns that SharePoint uses for different types of authentication. And applications is kind of one of the scenarios that we really made drastic changes to how we do authentication for users and for applications. So first off, I've got my first application, I've got an onboarding app. So I'm going to click on this SharePoint application, and I'm actually doing an OAuth token to my application. So you'll notice that when this launches, the application itself is basically an anonymously secured application. But SharePoint passes an OAuth token where I can actually get the current user. So you can see I've got Karen is actually my user here. And I can actually go in and make calls back into SharePoint with that OAuth token. So it's user plus context that I can call back into SharePoint. So in this case, I can actually do an equipment selection or equipment workflow. Or I can actually go back in and click on SkyDrive information. So I've got an app that maybe is calling back in and grabbing documents from SkyDrive using that same OAuth token. But what's interesting about this application and kind of the pattern that we're going to talk about a little later on some of the different auth patterns is that this application is just an anonymous app, and it's using just that OAuth token. So if I go out to my application onboarding, it doesn't know who I am, right? So it will actually reject me. You got to work with your developers and make sure that they secure it, because you're going to trust them that they're going to say, no, don't worry, we'll make it anonymous, and then I'll just do the security on it. So you got to basically make sure that they are actually doing that that certification check on it. But that is one of the patterns that we're going to talk about, is when do you use anonymous, and when would you actually use like a Windows security on top of anonymous? So I'm going to go back to SharePoint here. The other thing that we get a lot is, okay, we've built applications on-premise, right? We have data applications. We have things that query databases. And so what do we do there? How would we actually end up doing that? So here I've got some web parts. These are actually querying on-premise database that we've got and do some visualizations on that database. So here I'm going to make a request. It's actually running that query right now. This is on-premise data. It's running a database. I'm actually using a current user for that using a Windows user. So we can basically do Windows users if we need to, and use that secondary authentication, whether we're using Windows or whether we're using a SAML on our backend systems. Now, you still get the OAuth token. So I can, if I need a call back into SharePoint or if I just need to get current user, I can get that. But a lot of times our backend systems actually need a different authentication mechanism, Windows, or in this case, it might be Kerberos. So we can actually do that as well and have those married together. So, the concept is if I can get to the data, if my user can authenticate, I can actually mesh up those UIs very easily. And obviously, then I've got just kind of different visualization on it. So what we're going to do is walk through kind of the different setups that we need to kind of make these things happen, whether we're on-premise or whether we're in the cloud, and kind of having those environments meshed together for our on-premise apps and for our cloud environment as well, and kind of the different security patterns that we do for each of these scenarios.
All right, so let's look at some identity basics. Like one of the things that, one of the questions I always get is, and some of the confusion is, that how the user authenticates is who the user is. And what happens a lot of times is because we tie those things together, it's really hard to tease it apart and really hard to understand what's going on underneath the covers and really hard to do some of the patterns that Nathan talked about where I'm using different context tokens, how the user authenticated versus how the user accesses the system. What we're going to do is we're going to tease those apart and talk to you about that. So the first part here is the type of access, right? Where are they accessing it from? Are they accessing it from their local LAN? Are they accessing it from a remote environment? Maybe a VPN. So for example, if you access it from a VPN, it is the client credential that you're actually getting. But if you're accessing it from a corporate network, still the client credential. If I'm accessing it from home or on my phone or on my iPad, if I didn't authenticate, I don't really have a token, right? I don't have an authentication mechanism unless I present some type of user ID and password. This is going to give you the who. The identity of the user, of really how they authenticated. Then we have some authentication information, which will tell us specifically how they authenticated. If it's a Kerberos token, I'll get information about their Active Directory groups. If it's an LDAP form, I might get some roles. If it's a SAML token, I'll get a SAML token with a set of claims. I'll get some authentication information about them. There might also be entitlement information that I might have to give them. If they're the CEO, I want to give them some additional rights and privileges just because that person is the CEO. So there's some entitlement information that we have to think about when we're looking at identity. We also have to think about profile information. Profile information are things like what department do you work in? What's your phone number? What geographic region do you live in? The user might have control over that, but from a security standpoint, we have to think if the user has control, we can't secure it based on what the user can modify. But there are things that I can do in the background from a security standpoint, or from a data showing and hiding standpoint, just because of who they are, just because of where they live, based on their identity. And then there's runtime information. And that runtime information is things that the app can add to your identity that allows you to make some authorization decisions or decisions inside the app that the user doesn't even know about, right? If a person logs on, and let's say it's an export control type scenario where I got to make sure that the person works for the company, that's some runtime information that they're not going to modify. They're not entitled to. It doesn't live in their profile, but it's something I have to give them as part of their authentication process. So when we look at identity, we have to look at all these parts. We have to look at everything that is within that identity, and then we'll talk about some questions that we can ask of how to actually get to some of these. When you're planning identities, you have to ask yourself a few basic questions. Where are the physical users stored? Are they in Active Directory? Are they in the cloud? Are they in some federated? Are they Google IDs or Yahoo IDs, right? We have to ask that. Where's the physical user identity stored, and where's the physical user information stored? How will they present credentials? Will they present a user ID and password? Do we want to do single sign-on where they do a pass-through? We also want to ask ourselves, do we want to do multi-factor authentication? Or in one case, I heard of something where it was four-factor authentication. What will they need access to? Once they get into the system, what do they need access to? They need access to SharePoint. SharePoint has its authorization authentication patterns that it needs. If you're accessing an external system, maybe SAP or some other ERP system, something homegrown, it has its own ways of logging on and authenticating. So what do they need access to once they log on? The other thing that's important to note is, how do I get rid of that user when they go away? I have to worry about the life cycle of this user account. Do I want to manage the user ID and password of this particular user, especially if I don't care about it? All I care about is that the user identified who they are by some mechanism, whether it's a user ID and password, whether it's a certificate on their machine. Maybe that's all I care about. I don't really care about the physical user in general, right? So I don't have to worry about getting rid of them. That would be more of a federated scenario, where I want to do federation, where I trust somebody else. So some core identity questions to ask. There's 9 of them here. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I'm going to go through the ones that I think are really, really important. The first one there is, do you really need to authenticate? So does your application just need to know that a user has presented and been authenticated, or do they need access to some backend system? So in the example that Nathan showed, when they're accessing backend data, I need that Kerberos token, which means I need to make sure that they're a Windows identity, because that's the way I can get back to SQL Server. So I really had to make sure that they authenticated. For the app, I had to make sure that they authenticated. If I have a weather app part, the weather app part doesn't really care about the authentication. All it cares about is that it's installed in a farm and it's valid for that particular farm, but I don't really have to authenticate that user. So ask yourself, do I really have to authenticate? Another one that's important is, do I own the identity? That's really important, because what happens a lot of times with customers is they take on the burden of other people's identities, and a lot of times it's for no good reason. It's because they want to own some information about that user. So you have to ask yourself, do I really own that identity, or does that identity belong to someone else? And then the last one that I'll talk about here is the information you need enough for authorization? Again, I'll go back to, is the fact that they authenticated enough? Is their email address enough? Is their information about their department enough? Is their phone number enough? And always ask yourself those questions. Is it enough? Because that's going to help you, that's going to help guide you around your identity solutions to let you know what's good enough for a particular application. Some common authentication authorization patterns that we see. The first one is the one, my favorite. It's party time. It's anonymous, right? I don't care who you are. This is really good for like public websites, really good for some of the public CSOM that you can do on Office 365, but I don't care who you are, right? Another one is, well, right this way, but I'm going to watch that person. This is something like a tracked anonymous, where I might drop a cookie on your machine. It's an anonymous cookie, anonymous session cookie. I don't really care who the user is, but I need to know some information about that user, about that user session. Another one is, well, if you got this far, then you must be okay, right? You must be fine. This one is the app pattern, and we'll do a visualization about the app pattern. This other one here is, who are you again, which is probably what you're familiar with. It's single sign-on, but it's just single sign-on lots of times, right? With the same user ID and password, no giggle at all. Single sign-on must be a very sore subject. He's with me, or the VIP pattern, which is an association or federation. This is similar to like the TSA, right? The TSA doesn't necessarily trust you. They trust the issuing authority. They trust who you got your license from, or they trust who you got your passport from. They don't trust you. Starbucks doesn't trust me. Starbucks trusts my credit card. They don't trust me, right? So this is a, you know, kind of a VIP pattern. The other one here is what I call a wait right here pattern, trusted subsystem. SharePoint does this already. It goes, and after you authenticate the SharePoint, the identity token that's on the thread is the one that SharePoint uses. But when it actually goes to fetch the data, it is doing it for you, sifting through the data and actually doing all the security and ACL trimming for you. This one here is what's called the trusted subsystem, which is one account or some set of accounts. They're the ones that are allowed to go fetch the data. They will sift through the data based on the user, and then they'll hand it back to you. Another one here is the what I call You Look Like Someone I Know, which is the shadow account. Nathan already hinted to this. Office 365 does this if you're doing directory synced accounts. You've got an on-premise identity. You've got a synchronized identity. In the cloud, that cloud identity is a shadow account. You cannot log on with that account, but when you authenticate to an environment up in the cloud that has a copy of your account. That's a shadow account. We see this a lot in federation patterns. We also see this a lot if people are doing ADFS even internally, where I have someone logging on with a Facebook account, but behind the scenes, I have a backing Active Directory account where I do some of my profile information and runtime information, but they don't authenticate with the Active Directory account. They actually authenticate with some other account. And the last one here is what I call the Let Me Do That For You pattern, which is impersonation. So what Nathan showed you, where the Kerberos token was actually going all the way to the back to the SQL database to go fetch that information on behalf of Karen, and you knew it was an on-premise app because we wrote on the top, on-premise app. So that one, that app actually had security all the way down to the database. So we carried that Kerberos token all the way down to the database, impersonated that user all the way down, and got it back. So we're looking at all these different authentication patterns and authorization patterns. How does that relate to SharePoint? So let's look at the SharePoint user identity. So here, I've got a SharePoint user in SharePoint context. A user authenticates on their PC. When they authenticate, I get information about how they authenticated. They might authenticate with a live ID. They might authenticate with an organizational account, an Office 365. They might use their Windows credential. SharePoint's then going to turn around and add some additional information. If you're on-premise, it's going to add some Windows. It's going to convert your Kerberos token to some Windows claims, give you some claims information. If you're in the cloud, it's going to give you a set of roles and a set of groups. And it's going to add some additional profile information for you. So it's going to have your email address and your SIP address. All of that represents your SharePoint user, your SP user, in context. And all those things are actually validated in one form or another. When Nathan mentioned it's the OAuth token, well, within the OAuth token that gets passed, the OAuth token that goes from an app to SharePoint, there's nothing in there that identifies that identity. It actually identifies the tenant. But what you can do is with that token, go back to SharePoint and ask for that user identity, and that user identity you're going to get back is an email address. That email address is going to let you know what tenant that user belongs to. So these are all types of things within SharePoint context that we have to think about. So here, once they authenticate, that token is represented in some way, how they authenticated, how it's represented within SharePoint. NTLM, Kerberos, if I'm doing classic on the inside. Otherwise, it's a SAML token, Windows claims, or FBA, on the with the SAML token for a SharePoint. So why claims? We get this question a lot. Why claims? Well, one of the things that it does is it decouples the authentication and puts SharePoint kind of at a backseat to the authentication process. Right? I trust someone else to do the authentication. Once they're in SharePoint, then I can do my work. Right? So it does help do that. Other thing it does, it enables federation. So we see a lot of things around federation, where they want to do external identities, where they want to share information with external folks, but they don't want to manage the password. Without claims, Kerberos doesn't really exist on the cloud, so we had to do something that was portable across the internet, and that's why we went claims. Some of the authentication modes within SharePoint 2013, if you haven't seen this before, SharePoint supports both claims and classic. However, if you're doing classic, migrate over to claims, migrate over to Windows claims. Nathan and I did a pretty good set of sessions back at TechEd and SharePoint conference, the last SharePoint conference, so definitely look us up if you want to know more about the claims migration process. How would I take my SharePoint 2010 environments and migrate them over to claims? For classic authentication, if you're still doing this, make sure you're doing it on purpose and make sure you have a plan to get out of it or do something else. Don't stay on classic for too long.
So next, what we'll talk about is authentication and authorization on the app side. So when we looked at on the SharePoint side, really the model for 2013 is very identical to 2010 when, as far as kind of SharePoint's concerned, right? So if I've built or if I use an STS in as SharePoint 2010. Essentially, that same flow is going to work in 2013 as well. But in the app model, that's where kind of things change. So for 2013, we basically use OAuth for apps. I was talking about that earlier. And so OAuth is basically used for passing that current user as well as what that app has access to. So the other things that we use for OAuth is we use kind of well-known app principles. So for example, if I wanted to do two SharePoint farms and I wanted to have kind of SharePoint talking to SharePoint, or if I want to do search and I want to do that remote SharePoint search handoff, that's actually used in OAuth models as well. Same with Exchange, same with Link, and have in Workflow Server as well. So when we kind of talk server to server, when we talk apps to server, basically it's SharePoint's way of communicating across without us having to do Kerberos to everything or without us having to do an STS to each thing and have that pass through to things that don't necessarily trust the SharePoint STS. So things that it's not used for, so yeah, SharePoint supports OAuth, but it's not used for sign-on, and it's not used for an authentication provider. And then obviously it's not going to show up in the people picker as well. So I just put this in here kind of for completeness of the scenario, is keep in mind that apps have permissions. So when we actually have the apps installed, you know, a user has to have permission to install that. It's not going to allow a user to install an app that has greater permission than they've got for the site or for a tenant or for SharePoint. So the apps are actually granted permission when the user is actually doing the install. So the user does install, that's when the permission for that apps get granted. And then the app permissions are obviously required to do any kind of calls into SharePoint. So the onboarding app I saw that I showed you guys, I had app permissions actually at a tenant level because I was making calls into SkyDrive or OneDrive to do that. And I was also making calls into my local SharePoint environments as well.
All right, so the app identity, let's look at what this looks like. Here we have an app identity and we have SharePoint. And as Nathan just mentioned, we have OAuth. So let's just get a visual of what this actually looks like. OAuth is used to get access into SharePoint from the app. User then will authenticate to SharePoint. They'll get a token. That token will be either a Windows user, an FBA user, SAML user, AKA organizational ID, Azure ID, SharePoint user. There'll be one of those types of users depending on the authentication that you have for your SharePoint environment. There'll be one of those types of users represented. When I'm looking at the app, that user identity for that app, what actually happens is that user identity kind of surfs on top of that OAuth token. So you don't really have the identity, but you actually do have the identity. You have the identity in context. That was how we got back to the environment on-premise, because they authenticated with ADFS. ADFS provided me a Kerberos token, gave me a SAML representation of that Kerberos token, allowed me to go all the way back to the back end. So in that app, in this case it was SharePoint, again, that user identity just floats right on top of that for the app and then allows me to get in. So that's something to think about as you're building your solutions and as you're looking at your solutions of how these identities actually flow, how these identities actually work, and that you could potentially have more than one identity that you're dealing with. Identity in this case is cookie, right?
So what we're going to look at is one of the apps where I showed kind of on-premise, and we'll look at a lot more detail as far as how we actually do one of publishing that application, but also what happens on the identity side for that application. I think almost seven. So I'm back to the page where we've got our on-premise customer data because it's titled on-premise. So as far as you know, it is on-premise, right? All right, so it really is, and I'll kind of show you where we're doing the publishing of it. But one thing I wanted to show you is I have actually one other web part for user identity. And I did this so that you can kind of see what the different tokens look like. So when I click on my user identity page, it actually is going to show you two sets of tokens. So the first set of tokens. So the first set of tokens for my on-premise identity, I actually didn't fix the title on it. But if the first set of tokens is actually what SharePoint hands off to you. So if I did no other authentication for that application, I still know who the current user is. I know the context of the site that they're actually coming from. I know who issued that that trust. In this case, it's the Federated Microsoft Online Services, because I'm actually in Office 365 right now. I also know who the current user is, and I have actually the user ID that was generated from that named issuer. Same thing on-premise. If I've set up S2S trust, the same thing happens, right? So I actually get the same set of information, but really not much more. But the other thing that we've got, and in this case, I'm in Office 365, but you'll see down below I've got application authentication. So we actually can do a secondary authentication. So I always kind of think about it as you kind of get two IDs that you can leverage, right? So one is I get the OAuth ID, but I can also always leverage a secondary ID, whether it be an STS or whether it be Windows. So in this case, I'm actually using Kerberos. Because a lot of times if you're doing SQL queries or databases, a lot of applications that developers build, especially for on-premise, run in Kerberos. So why not have those same Kerberos applications just run the way they are, and then we'll actually just publish those into our environment. Or if I'm on-premise, I don't need to do anything, right? I just have the developer pull that into Office 365. As long as I can authenticate to the application, or can access it, the content, mm-hmm. I can actually get to it. In this case, I'm a non-domain joined machine, or I could be on an iPad, so I needed to actually have a reverse proxy to publish that application to make all this happen. So what I'm gonna do is I'll go over into my proxy and kind of show you how we actually end up doing that. So here you can kind of see, and I'll try to zoom in on some of these. But basically, I've got some set of rules for my reverse proxy. You saw earlier that if you guys didn't get the memo, TMG and UAG are not doing so well. But what's great about that is we've got 2012 R2, right? So it's a very good replacement and actually simplifies a lot of scenarios for publishing applications or actually leveraging kind of different identity models. So in this case, I'm actually publishing my apps. So I've got an app server out here that's living on-premise, and I'm actually doing a publishing rule for that. I also have an ADFS rule for doing kind of straight ADFS federation. And then I also have my intranet that I'm publishing as well, just because I wanted to have that single cloud experience, whether I'm on-prem or I'm on the internet. So if I look at kind of how we do the application publishing, I'm going to go just kind of show you quickly a view to this. Just because we've got a couple things that we have to have happen, and I'll show you what that means in the application itself. So here I'm actually doing pre-authentication. So I'm using pre-authentication, I'm using ADFS to do a pre-auth. So what that means is I've authenticated, and then once I'm actually going into the proxy, I'm actually no longer in leveraging basically that SAML token that ADFS gave me. I'm actually going to leverage my Windows token for that. So let me go through this and kind of show you what the settings look like.
Yeah, and that ADFS, just to be a little clear, that ADFS is a Windows Server 2012 R2 ADFS, not the regular ADFS that comes with 2008. This is a Windows Server 2012 R2 feature.
And the remote access
is
what we're looking at
proxy,
right now.
Yep.
So here you see that in ADFS, I actually can pick that I want a Windows app. So basically in ADFS, it's a non-claims application is what you're going to want to do. That actually sets up that kind of protocol transition from SAML to a Windows Kerberos token. So I go next. And then so kind of finally, the one thing that you'll need then, so I needed to have a cert that I can trust. So here I've got a wildcard cert that I'm trusting. And then I need an external URL that goes to my app server. So one thing to kind of note is when you're doing kind of authentication publishing of this, if you've got a lot of applications that you want to have published, I recommend actually when you're publishing to your IIS, publish the IIS site and actually just have that main site have that host header to have the host header redirection on it, and then have all the other applications underneath that. That way you just have to set the rule once for the identity or for the token, and actually have all the different publishing for that application. All the apps on that server can be published at one time through this one rule. So the last thing I wanted to show you was this is where we're actually saying, okay, from the proxy server to my backend application server, I'm going to switch it to Kerberos. And that's kind of the rule I need to switch that to Kerberos. So when I go over to my application server, you'll notice that I've got, it's just an IIS, and I've got Windows authentication turned on. So this means that basically anything that's hosted in IIS can actually have a Windows identity turned on and leverage that in the application. In this case, if I want to go ahead and disable this and go ahead and enable anonymous, and if I go back to my Office 365 and I refresh this page, You'll notice that now I've actually got no app user. You know, so we can basically leverage that app user. We can leverage Windows Identity in any kind of applications that we publish to Office 365 as well. We don't have to be limited to trying to figure out how we actually can get an Office identity to on-premise. If your users are accessing an app on-premise, they can still access that app on-premise. If they're wanting to access it on a device that's not a domain-joined device like mine, then potentially leverage something like a reverse proxy is potentially a very good way to go for that. If this is something that I wanted to have the leverage the SAML users for that, you can leverage ADFS directly. I could have actually had that app trust ADFS as opposed to just leveraging Windows Identity for that. Okay. So kind of the environment that we looked at is it looks like this. So basically, we've got the directory sync happening for our Windows. We have ADFS set up for doing the authentication to Office 365. And that ADFS is basically, because I've already authenticated in that session or on my machine, it's using that same ADFS token to get basically the next call from SharePoint. When SharePoint's making the request for the application, it knows I've already authenticated this user, so I'm actually going to use that token and then pass that to that app server. So that's why you didn't see it get prompted again. It basically routed me back through because I've authenticated, and then it switched that protocol to Kerberos once I actually got to that application via ADFS and the web proxy.
Yep. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about here is the difference between a Microsoft account and an organizational account. And this was really important because if you're going to be looking at 2013, you're going to be looking at the cloud, you have to think about some of these scenarios and you have to worry about this. And we wanted to let you know, because a lot of times people get confused. Why do I have two different sets of identities? I don't understand. How does this work? If I'm an end user, I have a set of devices that I use. There's a BYOD trend happening in the industry. So users could bring their own devices. They could have corporate devices. But they have a set of devices. And they're going to download things onto their device. Some of the things that they download are for work, that an IT administrator may publish. Some of the things that they download are personal. The personal things that I'm going to download, well, those things I might use my personal credit card for. So now you're asking yourself, well, if I use my personal credit card for that app, for that SharePoint app, for that Office app that I use, if I use my personal credit card for that, I don't want to give it to the organization, because if I leave the organization, they have my credit card. On the other hand, if I leave the organization, I want my apps, because I paid for them, right? So how do we rationalize this? How do we figure out how to separate these two realms? I've got a personal realm with a credit card, and I've got this work realm. So what Microsoft does is they have two separate accounts. They have a Microsoft account, or what used to be a Live ID, what used to be called Windows Passport, and an organizational account, aka Azure Active Directory. And what that does is it allows me to download apps on my device, both from work and from home, and I use those devices, I use those apps wherever I have access to them. If I happen to leave work, I keep my apps with me. If I happen to be at work, I can use those work apps, and never the two shall meet. Same thing happens on a Windows phone. Windows phone actually declares kind of two sides to your phone. There's the personal side of your phone and the office side of your phone. It's like a mullet. And everything can live in harmony. So does that help to clear up the Microsoft account, organizational account? Does anyone still have questions around this? Because I usually get a lot of questions around, why do I have two of these accounts? Did anyone have that question walking in here? Nobody had that question. I answered a question for my pet. All right.
Yeah, so the one thing to note is, and this actually came up in our last session as well, is if you stand up SharePoint 2013 on-premise, just be aware of this. So there should be guidance out there. Actually, there's a link on here as well. But if you stand up SharePoint on-premise, you've got to do some app setups to get apps from the store working. And so apps from the store require that secondary trust for Azure ACS, because that's what's actually leveraging the approval to have that app run in your environment. So this is not needed for, if I'm building applications on-premise for a SharePoint hosted on-premise, this is not needed. But if I have a SharePoint hosted on-premise and I want to consume an app from the store, this is when you'd need to do this. That said, the other setups as far as the app setup goes of doing essentially the DNS rule to do wildcard and routing, that's still required. So a couple additional notes on the app side of this as well is So what I mentioned before and kind of showed you is, so apps can actually leverage another identity in addition to the OAuth identity that SharePoint passes to the app. So you can always actually leverage essentially two when you're in the environment. So the other thing is, if I'm actually on a SharePoint environment on-premise and I'm trying to publish a SharePoint environment on-premise through like an extranet and leverage an app on-premise, be careful about the app web. So there's essentially apps redirect to an application. And what you'd want to do is have the application hosted the way I did, with essentially no kind of SharePoint hosted app, because it actually causes some issues if you're doing a reverse proxy publishing on that. So be aware of that, because it's got some Kerberos issues as well as a wildcard publishing issue as well. And then so also, when you're looking at kind of your environments and you're talking with your developers or you're talking with your third-party plugins, think about the with us having you know, these cloud options as well, think about the audience that's consuming the app or the capability. You know, is this a user that's on-premise always? Is this a user that is going to be in the field always? Or is this going to be an O365 only user? And that's really going to drive, you know, the guidance that you can provide to your developers or to your third-party groups about what types of identities those applications are going to be required to have. And then also, obviously, the security of the context of that app as well. You need to kind of think about that in the environment. So next, what we're going to talk about is some of our cloud and kind of advanced patterns. So this is kind of the environment that we've got set up for leveraging kind of the reverse proxy. And again, you don't need to do that. This is only if I want to have access from a non-domain join machine or if I want to have access outside my environment. But we are seeing this request more and more often because when people are moving to the cloud, they're wanting to take some workloads in the cloud and some workloads on-premise, but they want to have kind of that experience be the same. So I think it comes up a lot more often. And people that have been kind of against publishing SharePoint and intranet are getting much more open to it because they can do more things on-premise and kind of have that gap closed as far as what's offered in the cloud versus what you want to do on-premise. And this is kind of what the environment would look like. So our old guidance, I wanted to give you a new picture because the old pictures show TMG and UAG. But so our new guidance is that we'd actually leverage Windows 2012 R2. We would actually publish that environment. We could do like I did with the apps. We can do a pre-authentication leveraging ADFS or have that kind of environment go. And then the one thing that to note is ADFS or the proxy to the SharePoint environment ends up being that Kerberos token. But once I get to the SharePoint environment, that actually switches that to a Windows claim. So when it's bouncing around SharePoint, it goes to a Windows claim token and while it's going through all the different SharePoint services. As soon as we make a call off of SharePoint onto some other service that SharePoint's leveraging, it actually switches from a Windows claim back to a Kerberos token, leveraging claims to Windows token service. So if you're ever getting calls leveraging some of the BI tools and whatnot, and it's not working correctly, it's probably because the Windows token service isn't working properly in your environment or isn't turned on. We'll skip this one. Yep. So we've already kind of showed this on the reverse proxy, so we'll skip this one and kind of go to the next one.
Yep. Before we jump in, are there any questions on what we've shown you so far? So I was hoping for like a big, huge round of applause because I could actually do Kerberos from the internet. I don't know if anyone knows how cool that is. I don't know if anyone cares how cool that is. Somebody has to care how cool that is. A Kerberos token from the cloud to on-premise data. Any questions on what we've shown so far? All making sense? Yes, sir. Say that one more time, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The question is, will there be another type of identity service that's not the claims to Windows token service in order to get back to the Kerberos identity? Is that? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
That's right.
So that's right. So in the case of kind of the hybrid search as well as in the BTS case, that's where we've got a couple of different options on identity. It depends on if you're in the cloud or if on-premise. But they're basically, in the cloud, they're actually leveraging secure store for having that credential pass, right? And if in cloud, you would actually use basically the hybrid config would actually be a cert that it can actually pass to the reverse proxy for a published service to have consumed. If you're on-premise, you've got a little more options as far as BCS goes. You've got still secure token service. You also have the application service that BCS runs under. And then you also have current user that can be passed through to back-end systems as well. I think there's one other. Oh, and then there's one other one, but I tend to forget it right now.
Group identity, yeah.
Yeah. So does that answer your question? Yeah, so you're saying that your on-premise environment's not using a Windows claim, or is the on-premise? So if you're using a Windows claim on-premise in your on-premise environment, the BCS is going to translate that.
Oh, you're talking about SAML. Okay, so you're talking about SAML authentication?
That's right.
Understand. Okay, so all right, now I understand. So the question is, I want to go from a SAML token back to a Windows identity. And still leverage the SharePoint subsystems and the SharePoint services. Let's talk offline about that one, because the short answer is no, and you're correct. The long answer is there's some ways to get around that using like WIF and using just the UPN, making sure. But there's a lot of scenarios there.
Or leveraging
secure store. Definitely, Come talk to us afterwards, because probably a deeper conversation than we want to have. But yes, we understand your pain. Going from a SAML token to a Windows token, that's the part that you were talking about.
Yep.
And the answer is that's correct. Those subsystems will not work if you're using FBA or SAML in the front. The only way claims to Windows token service works is if I go from a Windows token, I started with a Windows token, and I ended up with a Windows token.
So that's the claim to Windows token service. That's right. So that's kind of the challenge that this slide kind of points out as well, which is if you're wanting to leverage ADFS and you're in a Windows world, doing ADFS to a proxy allows you to have Windows identity. And the nice part about that is as Windows identities pass between SharePoint and backend systems, it's kind of nice to have that capability that everything's kind of configured leveraging Windows. The other option is you can have ADFS running directly to SharePoint. So that's when you're actually SharePoint's configured as with an STS that is leveraging SAML claims. The challenge with that is if I'm calling backend systems, I can't necessarily translate that SAML token back to a token that some of the SharePoint services, especially some of the BI services and data services, require. So you need to have a protocol transition happen somewhere. And so think about what SharePoint's connecting to, not just getting to SharePoint when you're thinking about kind of how you're going to do your authentication. The one thing to note, though, is there are going to be scenarios where you don't own the identity, like Israel was saying. So if a scenario is we don't own the identity, we have Federation partners that come in, then you're probably going to have to go with SAML-based and do the Federation of the user coming in. You're not going to have the option unless you do a shadow account, right? So the other option is we federate partners in. Our partners that we federate, we actually have shadow accounts that they can map to. It might not be practical in large, 100,000 user scenarios, but it might be a very good scenario for some of the smaller deployments as well, and scenarios where you need to have that ID query backend systems for other stuff. So,
any more questions? We have more questions over here? Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah. So that's a good question. So the question is, if I'm not leveraging Windows identities, I'm leveraging essentially a SAML environment, right? And I've got basically a .NET application, kind of what are my options? So you're right. So you've got two options. So on-premise, you've got the option where you could actually run it in the SharePoint context, and then you basically have that same context of what SharePoint's running in. That might be an option. The other option is if your application needs to talk SAML as well, everything that needs to have the same trust has to, and by the way, I had a picture for that too. I took it out of this. But essentially, every application that needs to talk SAML needs to trust the same SAML STS as SharePoint does. So in our ADFS world, if I was actually doing SAML, any application that I needed to pass that user identity to would need to have that same trust to the same ADFS that SharePoint has a trust to.
Yep. And then for FBA, the cool thing about FBA is that it's a cookie at the end of the day, right? So if I have a SharePoint app and I have FBA enabled and I have my ASP.NET membership provider, when I drop that cookie, as long as I drop that cookie in my FBA provider to the right domain, whether I drop it to root or I drop it to my application, if I drop it to root, I can actually share it across multiple apps. We actually just did this for a customer where SharePoint was configured with FBA. The cookie that they got from the SharePoint environment in FBA actually came from another FBA system that integrated into other .NET applications. So at the end of the day, like if you really look at that identity, what is that FBA token? That FBA token is a cookie that gets dropped to a domain. And if they're still on that domain, that cookie then still gets passed to whatever system it's going to go to. So if I'm going from web page to web page, I'm passing that cookie as long as it's valid for that domain. Now, there's some things you have to worry about when you're bouncing web applications within SharePoint. So there's some tricks and you have to do to get around the SharePoint cookie, because basically what happens is you get two cookies, one for FBA, one for SharePoint. But there are options with FBA to actually allow integration just into ASP.NET applications as well. It's a similar pattern to what Nathan said, though. You can trust either a cookie or you can trust a federated STS, and that's going to help you get around. At the end of the day, it's a cookie on a browser. Now, you do have to think about, in other scenarios, you do have to think about not just the passive case, which is the browser-based stuff, but you also have to think about applications, right?
Yeah.
Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
That's right.
If I have an FBA application, all the plumbing is in the newer versions of those tools, not the older versions of those tools. So I've got to think about that as well. Yeah, I'm sorry, question back there? Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, that one's an interesting.
So I actually meant to bring that up when I was kind of showing the navigation on the reverse proxy side. Office client. Whenever you execute, like, open up a document from the Office client, it starts a separate Explorer session. Basically, is what happens. So if you've got if the authentication hasn't happened in that Office session, you're going to get that secondary authentication. There's a couple ways that you can combat that. One is, if you're a domain user or you've got a device cert, that certainly is a way that you can combat that. Another way that you can combat that is through the Office web apps. So if you have ability to stand up the Office web apps, at least you get a lot better experience as far as when they click that, it opens. And then essentially, if it's mostly consumption-based, the Office web apps kind of handle that. And then they'd only have to open that up when they open up in the rich client. So at least you get to combat a lot of those different prompting as well. Yep. But also look at device certs or look at doing saved user in like an ADFS or something like that with a cookie.
Yeah, one more question, and then I move on. Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of the BI.
So the question is, what does SharePoint use the claims Windows token service? Do they use it for just some of the systems? Do they use it all the time? Why do I have to have it running? Things like that.
Yeah, so it's like, especially on the BI stack, so a lot of the Excel services stuff is leveraging that claims Windows token service because we need basically a Windows identity to do the back end queries. then you probably won't run into it. It really is when it's having to make an off-box call to go get data is when you hit it. And it's mainly in it's mainly in the BI services. I don't know that there's much other than that. All right, so the next thing that we'll kind of walk through, we're almost done with this, and then we'll open it back up for questions. The last thing we kind of wanted to talk about, and there's actually been a ton of stuff on this already, so we're not going to go through a lot of detail about the different types of identities and when you look at kind of cloud scenarios. But obviously, there's kind of three, and you've probably seen this already, especially if you've actually looked at Office 365. But essentially, we've got the cloud identities in using that just straight Azure AD, obviously. We also have directory sync, where we can use FIM or we can use DirSync to do directory sync plus a single sign-on with ADFS, which is kind of what I was doing in this environment. And then finally, we have a directory sync with a password sync. The one thing to note on the password sync, though, is it's not just doing a straight password sync and you're concerned that you're going to get hacked and they're going to get on-premise. It's actually a hash of a hash. So if something did happen and go south, we went all target on you, it's actually they can't do anything with that password because it's a hash of a hash that's being synced to the environment. So just something to be aware of. And then finally, kind of the last demo I want to show you, just in case you hadn't seen this before, is when you sync your identities to Office 365, it's actually syncing to Azure AD. Will you switch me over? So this is actually my Azure portal, and I actually have a few environments that I work with. And so what's kind of cool about this is once you actually do that directory sync to Azure AD, and by the way, it doesn't expose this by default. So what you have to do is go ahead and hit add, and then say an existing directory. So if you've got an Office 365, go ahead and existing directory. It's going to ask you to log, I'm not going to do this right now, but it's going to ask you to log out and log in with the global administrator for your Office 365 security. And once you do that, it will actually add that that Office 365 AD. It will expose it to your Azure, which is really pretty nice, actually. So once it's actually exposed in here, I can go into my environment. I can see users that have been synced. So you can see I've got users in, that have been synced in there. I also have groups that I can actually deal with as well. But what's nice about this is I can go into applications, and I can go ahead and add an application that our organization is developing. So another scenario where if I'm doing kind of cloud-based things or mobile things, I can actually add additional applications and trust that my organization is developing. Really what it's doing behind the covers, by the way, is actually just setting up the WS Fed stuff for you for the application, similar to what we talked about. But I'll go ahead and add an application from the store. And so this is kind of cool. We're getting a lot of partners on board with this in this Azure Gallery. So once we've actually made that commitment that, hey, we'll go ahead and sync those identities, there's all kinds of other stuff that I can start leveraging with that identity sync. So it really becomes like an extension of managing that identity. So not just for Office 365 and you call someone else up and you got to do their sync. If you look at the different patterns that we got in here, or the different partners we got in here, and competitors, there's actually quite a few. And it's growing every day. So this is a really good kind of structure to consider and think about when you kind of consider your cloud strategy. So these actually are just in here for your reference. So when we kind of talk about cloud infrastructure and kind of how the sync happens, there's just some diagrams for those. So we've got the password sync infrastructure, and then we have the request for ADFS. I just was going crazy with my Visio and my my fonts on there, so that's all. The one last thing to kind of show you in here is, and this has already been covered, I just kept it in the deck so that you kind of have the reference for what you were looking at in our environment, is we were basically doing kind of the hybrid configuration, but we weren't actually doing just the pure from the hybrid search. We were actually just doing two environments living next to each other and passing tokens between the two because it's web SSO, basically. A couple of useful information that I've got from kind of a setup configuration standpoint. Some decent articles on that.
All right, and with that, we're going to open it up for questions. Any questions on what we covered?
Go ahead.
Sir.
Does the application choose for short? Is that only for Office 365 or for Google Office 365?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the question was, the applications that we showed, is that only for Office 365? So it's not. It's actually for Azure AD. So Office 365 is an application that consumes Azure AD. And that's what these would be for as well. So the commitment would be that you'd sync your identities to Azure AD. Whether you have Office 365 or not doesn't really matter. So then you'd go talk to all those other vendors and figure out how they're wanting to do it. So, yep. But, I mean, think about it. Those are all cloud companies, right? So Salesforce, you're going to have to figure out how you want to do identity syncs and whatnot. Box, same way, right? So they're all cloud providers, and it's just a mechanism to kind of centralize how your identities work in the cloud. Yep.
Yeah, so LDAP, you can have forms-based. So the question is, can I integrate with an existing LDAP? So LDAP, you can have just the ASP.NET forms membership provider that plugs in the SharePoint, point that to your LDAP store. And that is pretty quick. There's a lot of blog posts already out there on that. There's stuff on MSDN that help you do that. So yeah, it integrates right into an existing LDAP directory. Yep. So you can do that, leverage your users and groups.
Any other questions?
Any other questions? Yes, sir? Yep. So the question is, the scenario that we talked about with Kerberos, the very cool scenario, is it blogged anywhere? Actually, I don't think it is blogged anywhere.
But somebody
here had a session on it. I think it was a previous guy. Yeah. Or if not, I think Nathan's going to...
From an app standpoint, we probably don't have a lot of information on doing that. I'll publish a blog on that.
Yeah, that was all brand new. We discovered it probably 3 o'clock in the morning. You discovered it?
Yeah, we were gambling, and we figured, well, let's go finish up the session. Now, it comes up a lot, and I've actually talked to customers a ton about it, and especially as we started looking at the cloud more often with customers. And it's surprising to me that it's not a more obvious kind of choice for people to do. So I'll definitely put some information on the kind of best practices for publishing applications for Office 365 and leveraging Kerberos for that.
And it's brand new stuff. So it's Windows Server 2012 R2. So it's brand new.
Right.
ADFS is brand new. So everything's really brand new. So that's probably why you're not seeing anything.
Yeah.
And you heard it here first.
Yeah, and also you get the challenge of developers versus security versus infrastructure. It always ends up being somewhat of a challenge as well. Yep.
All right, any more questions?
Yeah, it's kind of off topic probably, but
about GUIDs?
I have an on-prem SharePoint environment with constrained delegation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cross domain chaining with SQL Server.
Right.
Trusted subsystem.
Yeah. You.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much
for
coming.
Right, yeah.
Let's take this offline. Thank you very much for coming. Definitely appreciate your time. I think the next speaker's here.
Yeah.
Thank you.